You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Calvin Butenhoff, coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. Call or text, same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Elon continues to actively ruin. Just a reminder, if you have questions about who's in your district now, who's representing your district, what's going on, who are these people, we have an incredible, really detailed guide. Civic Media's new Wisconsin Legislative Voter Guide has everything you need. It's super easy. Go to civicmedia.us/voter-guide. And we just had Melissa Kay on before we went to the news. If you would like to hear her full talk with Andrea Ducklow. Sorry, my apologies. And who survived Hurricane Helene and her comments about that, you will find that on our website, civicmedia.us as well. Very excited to have our next guest joining us. She's our friend, our colleague, and she's the fabulous farm babe. She is Pam Yonke. How are you?
Well, I've got a voice, and that's saying a lot after we come off of World Dairy Expo.
You were a very, very busy lady last week. This was going on in Madison, and I can't imagine the running. You must have had some awfully long days.
Well, thankfully, I've got a fantastic team that took a lot of the heavy lifting off my shoulders this year. But you can't deny the hours, not so much just with the broadcast responsibilities. But I'm a dairy kid when I'm surrounded by beautiful bovines. And when all my buddies show up from across the United States, I have a tendency to I need my mother around to tell me when I should go home and go to bed, that kind of thing.
Well, that's great. You just because you love it. I think that's so great. One of the reports that I heard that you guys did from last week was about the cow photographers.
Yeah.
And they have moo makeup.
Oh, yeah. It's funny. That's why I love the story. Lee McCullough Jordan from Broadhead is a professional cattle photographer. She's grown up in agriculture her whole life. When she graduated, basically this job became available and she's been doing it since. And she's got three young kids. So trying to combine little kids with, kids and animals. You never want to work with them. Well, she's doing both. And I went behind the scenes and saw her visual setup. And like I have said, if you think that your kid's high school graduation picture was, set up or your wedding or just imagine, that's nothing compared to trying to take pictures of these bovines. She did over 1,000 pictures last week just at World Dairy Expo. And she had a team of 21 the day that I was there and there literally was four people on the animal, one by each shoulder, one by the back hips, and they moved them by a half an inch. It was fascinating. Just fascinating.
I bet. Do they actually powder them?
Well, so what they'll do, obviously those animals make you and I look pathetic as far as our presentation. I mean, when
speak
you go
for
to
yourself,
World Dairy
babe.
When you go to World Dairy Expo, it never ceases to amaze me when they bring in, we call them the show chests, and it's full of hair dryers, goop for their hair, for their hooves, everything. People will stand, literally the showmen will stand with the same scissors that they use on humans and just, they say, work the top line. Just to make sure that the hair stands perfectly even all across her back. So when not to be rude, and sorry, audience, but when it's time for them to go potty, somebody walks around behind them with a bucket to make sure that they don't get dirty in any way, shape, or form. Now that's pampering, if you ask me. And that's what was going on.
What a bunch of princesses, my God.
Wow.
Pam, we're being outshone by bovines.
Maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's Mubaline. Boom.
I don't want that many people touching me, quite frankly. I don't want that many people touching me. It was beautiful, though. And they all look fantastic.
What were some of the other big takeaways from the Dairy Expo? What really stood out to you?
Man, technology. I mean, you think AI? So in the dairy industry, I'm long in the tooth. AI used to mean artificial insemination only. Now, AI covers the gamut. We literally are measuring the footsteps that every cow takes because their pedometer tells us how they feel if they're in heat, sign of illness. So that is all calculated by how many steps they take. We're now talking about being able to have technology in their belly to, again, tip us when they're not feeling well, help with the ever-loving biogas discussion that continues in agriculture and beyond. I mean, the technology blows me away how we are monitoring. We can actually monitor an animal and figure out her behavior. Let's say she likes standing one place in the barn all the time, but it's not a good place for her to be. Technology now can teach her, no, come over here and lay down. No, come over here and drink water. No, come over here and eat or stand or do whatever. It just fascinates me. And it gets more and more impressive every year that I'm around it.
More and more detailed, it sounds like. That's incredible.
Data is a big part of production agriculture today, and it's been an issue that a lot of farmers have talked about with their farm organizations. So when you see, especially now, you see all that big farm equipment out in fields. Right now we're moving from soybeans, starting to combine corn. Those machines that you see in those fields are gathering a tremendous amount of data. So we will know on the go what our yields are, what the moisture in that crop is. We'll know everything as it rolls. And that is collected in the particular brand that you're driving. Now, the question has become, who owns that? The company that developed the software that's in that tractor,
right,
and the farmer, or the farmer exclusively? Because if a farm, and this is the same as far as sustainability, so a farm gathers all this information, the dairy cows, we've got milk production figures. We know how much she's producing, the quality of milk she's producing, how many days since she had a calf, how many days since she was ill. We have all of that. And now companies are saying, hey, we want to be able to tell consumers all about that cow. Okay, I'll tell you all about that cow. I've got the data. Are you going to pay me a premium for this data? So it's a very interesting push and pull. Farmers have had this data for decades, probably since they began farming. And now all of a sudden, because sustainability is an important topic with companies that are buying our milk, buying our grain, that type of thing. Government programs are all about how are you using resources? How are you taking care of animals? Now, all of a sudden, hopefully the farmer is in a little bit more of a commanding position saying, okay, yeah, I got all this information. If it's worth something to you, pay me something as a premium.
Absolutely. I just feel like, and we've talked about this before, Pam, with you, I just feel like our dairy farmers get the short end of the stick all the time. It seems like it's so hard for them to get ahead and to catch a break. So I hope they hold on to this power position and it works in their favor for a change. If you're just If you're just tuning in, Pam Yonke is our guest. She is the fabulous farm babe, and you can hear their reports at the bottom of the hour across the Civic Media Radio Network. Was there much chatter, Pam, at the Dairy Expo about the languishing farmers bill?
Oh, constantly. Farm bill. Yeah, we still, U.S. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack was on grounds with us on Friday. And obviously, he's in a unique position. He can't really speak to policy per se. He executes what Congress gives to him. But he did remind people that if we do not get a farm bill done during this lame duck session, we are in a world of hurt, because beginning January 1st, all of our farm policy retros back to the 1940s when the initial farm bill was written, and that would be catastrophic. And trying to help people that have absolutely no connection to agriculture, really, even adults beyond my years that are completely have no correlation that agriculture provides you the food that you see at the grocery store and that, just trying to help them elevate the conversation and make sure that there's a bipartisan effort to get it done during lame duck. I mean, I think we all realize just using the phrase bipartisan is almost a giggle anymore these days. So we're really concerned. And Tom Vilsack made that point on Friday. And it was a conversation piece through all of World Dairy Expo.
As you said, though, Pam, if we don't get this done, this will be catastrophic. not just for farmers, but for all of us, because that is all of a piece. We are all in this together, our farmers and, I don't know, being alive, things like that. And I would also suggest if you go to myvote.wi.gov, that will show you where who all your representatives are. It gives you all their contact information. You can weigh in on this and tell your representative you want this farm bill done. We want to see this get done because that does make a difference.
Well, and farm bill encompasses, don't think of the farm bill, and this has been another talking point in D.C., the farm bill, 80% of the money that's allotted in the farm bill actually goes through to social programs, school lunch programs, women, infant, children, the SNAP EBT program. 80% of the money in the farm bill goes to execute those programs. So if you're somebody that has ever found yourself in your life needing that, and if you're in radio, we've probably needed that somewhere in the course of our careers, those kinds of things could go away or change substantially if we don't get action on the farm bill. The other part that's being discussed right now is we're not getting any new money. There is no new money coming to the farm bill. We have to use what we've got and move it to the areas that that we are responsible for. And unfortunately, production agriculture usually gets the pushback on that. But the bottom line is the food system as a whole, to your point, depends on that farm bill. And we got to get her done in the lame duck session, or I don't want to be in my chair when it comes January 1st.
Well, I can't imagine the level of frustration among farmers. I really can't. It just feels like they've been sticking around with this for way too long. Naughty me. Sorry. Yes. It just slipped out.
I mean, and yeah, and I get very, very frustrated. And I've told you, Pam, and I've told other people we've spoken to on these topics that to watch Washington just play politics with this. Please contact your representatives. Call.
Be nice.
Be nice. Email and tell them they need to pass this farm bill. If they care about farmers as much as they say when they're on the stump, then they would pass this bill for them.
Pam Yonke is our guest. She's the fabulous farm babe, and we're going to continue our conversation. The current state of 4-H and Rasta sheep. I can't wait. That's all on the way. You're listening to Matt Nair on air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Yeah. Morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on air. Jay Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Dr. Slide on the board. Coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We are joined by our friend and colleague, Pam Yonke, is the fabulous farm babe. And before we get to 4-H and the current state of 4-H, I wanted to, I was listening one morning coming in, Pam, and it was you talking about the sheep with dreadlocks. I got to know more about the sheep with dreadlocks. What's going on with the Rasta sheep?
Well, we found them at this year's Wisconsin Sheep and Wool Festival that was happening at the Jefferson County Fairgrounds. And my assistant, Stephanie Hoff, was out there. And basically, this is a new breed of sheep that was brought into the United States. And one of the characteristics is that they end up with kind of dreadlocks as far as the wool is concerned. Mm-hmm. They're a unique breed, obviously. And there's something, I'm trying to think how she phrased it. There's multiple different ways that you can, use the sheep. It's not just about the wool. It's not just about the meat. They're great mothers. It also speaks to the dairy aspect of things. But definitely the way that they looked kind of would catch you by surprise if you walked through the grounds.
I bet. Especially if they're going, bah, man, I don't know. I was imagining.
Do you think their favorite artist is Bob Marley?
I can't help
this. This is a disease, everyone. I cannot help it.
He's on a roll now.
Lester Longwools. I was trying to look for the name. Lester Longwools is the name of the sheep.
That's so interesting. That's so interesting. Let's talk about 4-H. And this was obviously a big component, I would imagine, for you and so many farm kids. It's still around and it's still doing well.
Oh, it's thriving. And you're right. This is National 4-H Week, and that's part of the reason why I just wanted to bring it to your attention. I was very, very involved in 4-H, probably more involved in 4-H than I was in FFA, although I was involved in both. And now across the state of Wisconsin, we have got some 50 different countries, or I shouldn't say Wisconsin, 50 different countries that are involved in 4-H, 7 million kids that are involved in 4-H globally, 3,100 counties in the United States, a lot of our 4-H kids here in Wisconsin. In fact, I just got an update from Dodge County. They said they've got 580 youth from kindergarten through high school that are involved in 4-H just in Dodge County. And one of the things that I want people to understand is when they hear 4-H, they think about the kids they see at the county fair.
Yep.
And obviously, that is just a magnificent element. And that's kind of the way I grew up. But 4-H today is so much more. We are finding so many suburban and urban components. Schools where the kids' after-school project is 4-H. They're learning about budgeting. They're learning about food preparation, meals, so on and so forth. A lot of real-life skills that, you know, again, I'm showing my age. Home economics is not a thing anymore.
Right.
A lot of the things that you might have picked up in a regular class or an elective are no longer there. 4-H really fills the gap. Plus, there's leadership things. They've got sports now that are incorporated. I'm not going to use the right phrase, where kids are shooting arrows. What is that?
Archery.
Archery. Thank you. Archery is a big deal. We've got space science where they're building rockets, mini rockets, things like that. So 4-H continues to evolve. And I just want parents to know, if you're looking for a positive way for your kids to move forward, I know there's umpteen million sports opportunities, but 4-H is a cut from a little different jib. You're going to get a chance to know other kids your age, maybe younger, older. It also involves parents. It involves leaders that teach kids leather works or how to show your animal or how to do these things. So it's a really unique combination. And I want to give a shout out to all of the 4-H leaders. Mine was Mrs. Lubis, Carol Lubis up in O'Connell County. They are the ones that thanklessly run your fanny wherever there's a meeting, wherever you've got to be involved. And, you know, it's the same as soccer, but everybody shares you kind of thing. And I just want to really thank those 4-H leaders that are staples to keeping the program so vibrant and strong here in Wisconsin. But like I said, it is National 4-H Week. So if it's something you're curious about, check in with your county extension office, or you can always go to the 4-H website as well. And just remember, it's the number four, if you want to check it out.
Pam, I just wanted to ask you, you know, it's ever since working for Civic Media, I've become more interested and more attached to the world of farming, listening to you, listening to your show every morning when I'm driving in, listening to Hans Breitenmoser on Pat's show. For those of us who live in the city who don't have exposure to farms every day, besides listening to your show every morning or downloading as a podcast, that's a plug, but what can we do? Where can we go to find out more, whether it's books, articles, talking to people? How do we as city folk become more engaged with that community, even though we're not directly a part of it?
Right. Well, I would suggest a couple staple resources. And the reason I'm referencing these is I worry about just suggesting that people find podcasts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. As Jane and I will know as news people, consider the source.
Yep.
Yeah.
Make sure that you vet the source. So I would suggest going to the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. DATCAP, D-A-T-C-P. They have podcasts there. They have different services there you might not be aware of. They have great press releases there telling you about different programs and what's going on. I'd also suggest our farm organizations. Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation has an Ag in the Classroom opportunity. And it's not just for kids. It's for people that need to have some bullet points or some refreshers on what Wisconsin agriculture is. And the Wisconsin Farmers Union, likewise, has a great website. Those are trusted sources where I believe that anybody can go to and find something that will educate you or, you know, at least engage you a little bit more. But I do appreciate your support there, Greg.
I actually thought he was going to ask you what the age limit was for 4-H, because when you said that there was now a space aspect of it, you should have seen his eyes light up. He was like, oh, boy, I think you're too old. I think you're
space.
Too old. Pam Yonke is the fabulous farm babe. You can catch her across Civic Media. Thank you so very much, my friend. So good to see you.
My pleasure. My pleasure as always.
Take care. News is coming up next. Stay close. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air, coming to you across the vast and global Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Box, Sweet Kelby on the board. Coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join, you can call, you can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up later on today, 4 to 6 p.m., the Dom Salvia Show. He will be joined by Michelle Velasquez, the Chief Strategy Officer for Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin. Later on in the show, Dom will be talking to Scott Ross. Ethics, Firebrand, and Gen Xer Gemini. I follow him on Twitter. He's feisty. That's Scott Ross.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
That Scott Ross is feisty, so that should be an interesting conversation. Make sure you join Dom today from 4 to 6 p.m. Glad to have our next guest join us. I wish we didn't have to talk about this. Corey Hartman is the Civic Media's VP of Broadcast Operations. And, Corey, Hurricane Milton is already a Cat 5.
That is the breaking news, Jane. We just got, we've got these hurricane hunters that fly the planes into the hurricane, which you won't catch me anywhere near that. But the latest data says that the sustained winds are at 160 miles per hour in Hurricane Milton, and that increases it to a Category 5 about a half hour ago. It is doing something called extreme rapid intensification. So rapid intensification is just how fast it gets stronger and goes up by categories. Extreme rapid intensification is a 58 mile per hour increase in 24 hours. In the last 24 hours, Milton has increased 90 miles per hour.
Wow. And this is what we're seeing, Corey? And what is setting these storms apart is this rapid intensification of these winds. Isn't that what makes them even worse than they would normally be?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, there's some indication that our climate change and all of the things that are happening in that realm are responsible for this. We have less storms. We have more time in between storms, although we've only been about a week between Helene and Milton here, which is kind of crazy to say. And they're almost in the same general vicinity in the northeastern portion of the Gulf Coast area. They're stronger, they're faster, they intensify quicker, and they can cause more damage. Now that we've freaked everybody out, there is one slightly good piece of news, is that as Milton gets closer to the west coast of Florida, it's going to encounter more wind shear. And unlike tornadoes, where wind shear is better for tornadoes, wind shear is not so good for hurricanes. So it has the potential that it could decrease, probably down to a Cat 3. That's my forecast right now. But what it's going to do is it's going to spread out a little bit. So impacts are going to be felt more along the a greater distance along the coast and along the Florida Peninsula. So you're going to get the winds spreading out and affecting actually more people. We're just hoping that the winds will be less when it makes landfall.
And Corey, these are the same folks who just got hit by Hurricane Helene.
Yeah, there were impacts all the way down from the Big Bend all the way to south of Tampa. Obviously, nothing like we saw with the rain in North Carolina and Georgia, and of course the power outages that came in and you know really raked across that whole area. This is a little bit further south, more in the central Florida Peninsula, Tampa Bay and southward type of thing. But there's a potential that it could be a Cat 3 when it makes landfall. Cat 2 over Orlando and a Cat 1 when it emerges back out into the Atlantic on the east coast of Florida. And then from there, models aren't out far enough. So we're hoping for it to just continue moving eastward and not do any sort of recurve into North Carolina, because that would just be absolutely devastating if it did that.
They can't take any more water. That state is saturated.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be even worse than it is now. And what it is right now is beyond imagining.
I'm honestly, like, once you said it was going to be hitting, like, the areas that were already hit by Helene, I don't know what to say other than, like, once it's done, reach out again to the groups that we've been talking about. They're going to need even more now.
Make an appointment to donate blood. Do it now.
Yes.
Corey Hartman is our guest. He's the Civic Media's Vice President of Broadcast Operations, and he does many, many, many things. And he's been involved in storm chasing for a very long time and has quite an operation set up personally in Baraboo. I'm sure you saw this over the weekend, Corey, that one Republican representative from Georgia said, yes, they can control the weather. Don't tell me that they can't. So I would like you to either confirm or deny that people can control the weather. And where is this special apparatus located? Oh, I think we just lost Corey Hartman. Or he was afraid to answer my question.
I mean, it's...
And he's back.
He's back. I was going to say, one of the frustrating things when we were talking to Melissa Kay about this and we're talking about it now, I don't see anyone on the phone calling us, telling us we're wrong.
That someone can control the weather?
Yeah, the people that they support who are saying such poisonous things... They're not calling us right now saying you're wrong, because we have the facts that FEMA's on the ground doing the work. We have the facts that Corey is giving us, that Melissa is sharing with us. They're fine going on their websites. Call us and tell us we're wrong. We're not.
And don't get your news from Facebook. Don't get your news about this from your
TikTok.
Right? Your cousin's friend's aunt's podiatrist.
Former roommates.
Yes. You know, don't trust those sources. It's infuriating. Yeah,
there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there just in general. But then when we get, you know, weather events that maybe people haven't heard of before, or phrases that they don't know, polar vortex and all of that, right? It just really fans the flames and you know, meteorologists and forecasters like myself spend a lot of time online, you know, unfortunately trying to debunk some of these things and prove that, you know, the chemtrails are just contrails and things like that. It's colder air above, the jet engine exhaust is warm. It's the same as the condensation on your, you know, window in the winter in your car. And with hurricanes, I wish I could find the statistic, but it's something like the equivalent of 1,000 nuclear bombs of energy is given off by a tropical system of this size. So if you think one little space laser or one little, you know, rocket being shot into the center of a hurricane is going to get rid of a Cat 5, we're talking about energy on the magnitude that you can't even fathom. So as soon as I have the control of that, I will let you know.
Yeah, that'd be great.
because there won't be any more Cat 5s. And there will only be tornadoes out in fields where I know where they're going to be and I can videotape them and shoot the video and get all the money.
And don't forget, Corey, when you do get that special control, whether it's space laser, I don't know how you do it, but make sure you direct it absolutely at political enemies. Just nothing but political enemies. Get all the storms, all the ridiculous measures. It's just so
ludicrous.
And I said it before, like Jane let me know that there were people making fake reports so FEMA and others would show up to areas that weren't affected or people weren't there. I'm like, they should be in jail.
These were reports, Corey, that I saw over the weekend again because cell service has obviously not been restored to all of these areas. And then people are on social media like Facebook or TikTok and claiming, oh, Franklin up the road, I heard, is trapped. And then they send a rescue crew up there and there's no one there. So they're actually diverting resources away from people who need these resources.
Yeah. And, you know, there was a lot going on, going around about, you know, local municipalities and FEMA not allowing people to come in and help. And, you know, I did see some of that and had some firsthand reports of that, but that is no different than any other disaster area where XYZ agency takes over control of the area and the airspace. You can't just have people flying in and out without coordinating, because then we're going to have helicopters crashing into each other and all sorts of craziness going on. And so somebody has to be in charge. And of course, it's never going to happen as fast as people want. It's a dire situation. So that adds another layer of stress to it. But you can't just have, you know, Elon coming in and airdropping Starlinks and stuff. You don't have to get back on the internet that bad. I mean, we know you need to get the information out, but there are shelters, there are people sharing information, there's people sharing internet, there's charging stations, there's loads of love from Tide. There's all of these portable cellular company, you know, bringing in the cows, they're called cellular on wheels cow, right? And so they're bringing in these cow trailers and they're doing all of the things that they normally do in any situation like this. It's just really, really hard because it's really mountainous terrain and there's still mudslides and there's still things happening and there's still major roads washed out and the logistics again are just beyond what anybody can really comprehend unless you're on the ground. So, you know, Bob from Idaho giving his opinion online probably doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well, and as you pointed out, and we talked to Melissa Kay earlier this morning, she talked to a survivor of Hurricane Helene, and you make a good point, Corey. I believe that there are people of goodwill and good heart who are like, well, let's just fill up my truck. You know, we live in Virginia. It's not that far. Let's just fill
drive
up the truck
on down.
And we'll just drive on down and we'll take stuff there. Well, as you just said, and Melissa said the same thing, that can make things even worse. So while your thoughts and your intentions are good, logistically, that may not be the best thing for you to do right now.
Right. Take it to a central location, work through a church, work through some group firefighters or something that are, you know, coordinating a gigantic tractor trailer where it's going to go to a specific town on a specific date where people are going to know that they can get supplies. And there are people that are doing good things. We've got tons of our storm chaser friends that are down there right now and they've got, you know, water and trailers and Starlink and they're doing everything they can, but they even haven't gotten to the core of the damage, right? They're just doing what they can on the periphery where they're not being turned around at roadblocks. It's a massive, massive catastrophe. And it's going to take days, weeks, potentially months to even get back to any sort of normalcy there. There's whole towns that are gone.
I mean,
literally gone.
Just washed away. And I think it's important. The last time we had you on, unfortunately, Corey, and this was related to Hurricane Helene, Project 2025 will eliminate the department, the NOAA. It will eliminate the National Hurricane Center. It wants to privatize FEMA. What could possibly go wrong?
I mean, everything that you can think of can go wrong. I mean, if we can't, if it's not working fast enough for people now, I don't know how privatizing it is going to add anything. We've all worked in private organizations that you know, are do not nearly have the efficiency and funding that FEMA does. And a lot of people for FEMA is a lightning rod, right? That you hear FEMA and it's like, get out or whatever. You couldn't possibly be doing anything. It's the government. We hate you. And FEMA is the only one right now under the Department of Homeland Security, by the way,
yep,
that has the authority to take control, take the airspace, do everything that they can. Is it going to be perfect? No, there's always room for improvement, but this is a catastrophe of magnitude like we've never seen. And even though all signs pointed to historic 1,000-year rainfall totals, a lot of people didn't listen. A lot of people didn't get to higher ground. And there's nothing you can do when a town completely washes away or multiple towns. But they're all signs pointed to this, and it's going to take a long time to unravel it. And I can't imagine what it would have been like if we didn't have access to the NOAA satellites, the NOAA forecast models, and the NOAA people.
Yes,
because it still takes a person to do an accurate forecast.
Corey Hartman is Vice President of Broadcast Operations for Civic Media. Thank you so much for your time, Corey. Really, really appreciate it. Make sure to go to our website, civicmedia.us/help. We have links to several charities, Red Cross, World Central Kitchen, Samaritan's Purse, if you would like to make a donation. As Corey said, this is going to be months-long, if not years-long, process. Stay with us. We're going to lighten it up when we return. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, and Sweet Kelby on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join us. Call, text 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, or the platform that Jabba the Musk hates that we continue and always shall call Twitter.
Thank you. I almost started calling it X. I started to. But you've inspired me.
I just can't.
Yeah.
It's, you know how you get the thing in your throat? I can't do it. Just can't do it. It is that time, and we close out the show every day this way. 11:52, Calvin, it's time for...
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
If you ever have a thing you think should not be, please send it in to Jane Says... JaneSays, Jane Says at civicmedia.us. It can literally be anything from the world of animals, from nature, from science, from politics, you name it, we cover it in This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
And this edition of This Shouldn't Be a Thing is a serious one.
Oh.
It's very important.
All right.
Comes from the world of education, Jane. Ew. A California educator has been accused of cruelty after awarding bonus points to students who don't take a bathroom break during class.
I would need to make sure I understand this correctly.
There's a teacher in California,
okay,
who has been getting in trouble with parents, or is getting ire from parents,
okay,
because this teacher is awarding extra credit points if the student does not take a bathroom break during the class.
That seems not healthy.
That seems rather unhealthy. Like, I mean, we were all in high school once, and I remember wanting to just get out of class and, can I go to the bathroom? And it gives you
waste some time.
4 minutes to just get yourself together and relax.
Right.
But there shouldn't be a points value, I don't think. I don't think you should get extra credit for if I don't have to go to the bathroom, I shouldn't get a reward for that. And if I have to go to the bathroom, I shouldn't be penalized for that.
I think that, yeah. I would agree with you.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's just for people as they get older, but sometimes if you wait too long, this can lead to other issues.
It's not healthy to hold it.
No, it's not, Kelvin.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like that big of an issue to me. I'm going to defend the teacher here. I would assume that this is a problem in their classroom.
Too many kids are trying to skip out.
Getting up all the time and going to the bathroom. And the other thing is, when I was in high school and middle school, the school gave us these planners at the beginning of the year. And in the back, they had passes on them. And I know there were teachers who would give you extra credit based off if you had more passes or less passes left off. So it doesn't seem that dissimilar to that.
No, that's different, though.
But I still think that's you shouldn't be penalized if you need something, though. Like, you need a pass to go to the bathroom. You need a pass to go make a phone call to your parents. You should be penalized if you are, like, if you're caught smoking outside the high school because you asked to go to the bathroom or you're doing something wrong. But if someone has to use the restroom, then they have to use the restroom, and they could be a National Honor Society 4.3 GPA student. That shouldn't count against them.
Well, and I would think then, too, this could lead to, well, now you have to have a bathroom monitor go with you to make sure you're actually going to go, which would be I see that as problematic.
I do, too. It says in the article, this bizarre test of vesicle fortitude didn't sit well with viewers.
Vesicle fortitude?
I know. It's someone went to Columbia J-School. They said they deemed it egregious and inhumane. Now, that, to me, is a little too far. Like, you can still go to the bathroom. You can go to the bathroom, but it's
you won't get the extra points.
It's like
though.
A tournament. It's like a tournament of will. And someone said needing to ask permission to use the bathroom is barbaric. Well, you always had to ask permission. You can't just, unless you're in college. That's where I first learned you could just get up
and go
and leave if you wanted to.
Chris in Madison, listening on WMDX. Hey, when you gotta go, you gotta go. This is ridiculous.
I don't disagree with that. And if I was a parent and I found out, I'd be like, I wouldn't go insane or be truly upset. It's not going to keep my kid out of habit. But, you know, I think that, you know, if they're a good student, even if they're a bad student, they got to go to the bathroom. They go to the bathroom. This shouldn't be a thing.
And there you have it. Today's.
This shouldn't be a thing.
We always want to hear from you. If you have a thing you think should not be, send it in to janesays@civicmedia.us. Karina, we got about a minute and a half left. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Maybe I didn't hear from the beginning from you, but she's not penalizing anybody. She's just giving more if you don't go back and forth, back and forth. I was a teacher in the college. And the fact that the students just get up and go somewhere, it's kind of like, are you leaving? What are you doing? I'm talking. You didn't hear me. What's happening right now? So you as a teacher, really confused. I mean, are they leaving a class altogether? I think there is got to be some sort of communication between the teacher, because you're talking pretty much like all this time. You're standing in front of your...
Karina, we're running out of time. Thank you so very much. Thank you for checking in with us. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Craig and Calvin and all of our engineers. Without you guys, nothing works. And thank you most of all for calling and for texting and for listening. It absolutely means the world. I hope you find some joy today and you get the chance to share it. News is coming up next, followed by Todd Allbus. Stay close. You are listening to the vast and global Civic Media Radio Network. We'll see you tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.